Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And boy, is it an active war at the moment. The day as we speak has been filled with news reports of high drama in Boston with the suspects in the bombing earlier in the week of the marathon coming to a bloody denouement. It turns out, we're told, that the two perpetrators, at least those most immediately under scrutiny, are brothers hailing from Chechnya. And I'm delighted to have with us as our first guest a man who has done a considerable amount of study of the Chechen story. His name is Chris Farrell. He is currently the Director of Investigations and Research at an organization that does incalculably important work in Washington, D.C., Judicial Watch. He's a captain, now retired, a former Army intelligence officer specializing in clandestine and counter-espionage work, and a man I've come to regard as an absolutely invaluable resource on so many things. I didn't realize that one of them was on Chechnya, but we're delighted to have you with us. Tell us about your exposure to the Chechen sort of, festering sore, I guess is the way I think of it, that may have contributed to the attack that these two individuals are now increasingly evidently responsible for.
Thanks for your kind introduction, Frank. This is a long time coming. When I say this, I make reference to Chechens launching an attack in the United States. There's been a long simmering war between the Chechens and the Russians, and it goes back to even before that, to the days of the Soviet Union, where a province in the Caucasus, that region of southern Russia, abutting Turkey and Iran, just north of there, that's been a festering sore for the Russians for centuries. But the Chechens themselves, it's a militant Islamist group that seeks its independence, has been involved in a decades-long fight with the Russians, are probably some of the most vicious, brutal fighters known to the West. And it's not surprising that over time they have exported that brand of Islam here to the United States. They are the test bed for things like IEDs, improvised explosive devices. Before they ever made their appearance in Iraq or Afghanistan, the Chechens were using IEDs against the Russians.
Interesting. Let me ask you, Chris Farrell, to the extent that Vladimir Putin has been sort of central to this Chechen drama, I get why they would be angry with the Russians, but what is it that caused them, if indeed they were responsible for this horrific attack in Boston, to be anxious to spill American blood, in your estimation?
Well, because we're infidels. I mean, that's largely it. You know, we represent the decadent Judeo-Christian West, and we don't subscribe to their view. And
so this is about Sharia and the imposition of it worldwide, and it's really whether they're directly tied to al-Qaeda or not, it's that same mantra that animates the Muslim Brotherhood and so many other Islamists around the world.
And al-Qaeda reveled in creating training camps in Chechnya because they knew that they were essentially impenetrable, untouchable from the West. We have documents. We have a Defense Intelligence Agency Intelligence Information Report, an IIR, that details the creation of al-Qaeda training camps in Chechnya because they realized that the West would never be able to strike at them because of the sensitivities with Russia. The Russians were engaged in an ongoing civil war, so essentially it was a safe enclave for al-Qaeda to not only recruit and train but actually give people experience, combat experience, fighting against the Russians.
Yeah. And Chris, from again, with your background in Army intelligence, does it surprise you that the modus operandi of these guys using these pressure cooker bombs, we're told, you know, sort of implanting them personally? I mean, this seems like a fairly prosaic, even crude way to go about inflicting mass casualties. Is that consistent with the you mentioned IEDs and so on? This would appear to be, you know, sort of par for the course with these guys. But was there anything surprising about the tradecraft that we're being told about at the moment that would either confirm or raise questions in your mind about the likelihood that we've got the guys?
It's completely consistent with the decades-long track record. These are the folks who seized a theater in Moscow and had female suicide bombers walking among the audience, screaming at the audience, "We want to die more than you want to live."
This is, of course, one of those trademark comments of Islamists. Over the years, we've heard it from all sorts of folks, from you know, the Bin Ladens to a chap by the name of Suhail Khan, now that I think about it, who worked in the Bush White House for a time. These are the sorts of jihadists, in other words, Chris Farrell, that remind us that we're in their crosshairs, whether we're engaged with them or not.
They are radicalized. They have their own agenda. They don't subscribe to the same set of rules and conventions that we do. So they're not encumbered with sort of the niceties of how we would wish to conduct ourselves. They're running under their own playbook.
They are indeed. Well, we'll be following this closely. It's a story that I suspect will evolve dramatically in the course of the day since we've recorded this conversation with you, Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch. But we're very appreciative of your time and your expertise on this. I know we will be tapping into it further as this story unfolds. But let me switch gears, if I may, because you contributed mightily to an important product of the Center for Security Policy earlier this week. We put together what we call a virtual press conference, which is available at securefreedom.org. And Chris Farrell, you were joining with others who have expertise on matters that are arising in connection with the nomination of Thomas Perez to be the next Secretary of Labor. Tell us a bit about him and what people in the Senate were treated to in their confirmation hearing with him yesterday, and what the rest of us should know about him before this nomination goes any further.
Mr. Perez is an unapologetic, radical leftist. He's not a bomb thrower in that regard, but in the sense that he is unapologetic in that he's very bright, very capable, articulate, educated, very savvy individual who knows how to get things done. He knows how to manipulate the levers of the state. And he's been doing it at the county level in Montgomery County, Maryland, as a county commissioner or supervisor on the board there. And then over time has worked his way up to be the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division of our own Justice Department.
Let me ask you about one other piece. We're going to be talking with Rosemary Jenks here in a little bit about immigration issues. He was also associated before he became a county commissioner in Montgomery County, as you know, Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch, associated with an organization called Casa de Maryland. Tell us about it, what it's about, and how it speaks to this this sort of radical ideological agenda of this fellow.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a racialist, organized and operated organization which seeks to, in large part, facilitate criminal activity in that they subsidize, promote, and facilitate illegal aliens being present in the country and then getting employment unlawfully from companies or from organizations that are tax cheats. So their job is to get illegal aliens a place to live and a job and to function in our society outside the law. And they've turned it into a cottage industry. What was once supposed to be a quote-unquote small grant for a few hundred thousand dollars has turned into a multi-million dollar enterprise that enjoys the support of then-President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. So this is the type of hyper-racialist, hyper-leftist, agenda-driven organization
that he's been associated with, and presumably is the agenda that he would bring to the Justice to the Labor Department. Christopher, we have to let you go with this. Thank you very much for your insights on both of these important topics. We'll look forward to visiting with you about them further in the days ahead. Next up, Rosemary Jenks joins us on comprehensive immigration reform. Straight ahead.
I want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
If you never listen to Mike Gallagher visiting with Chris Wallace, you don't know what you're missing.
I don't like the Olympics. I'm not a
Why?
Big Olympics fan.
Because they get sweaty?
No, because I just don't. I only care about stuff in our own country. I don't care about the Olympic Games.
Well,
I don't.
How about the United States winning? How about USA?
That's why I go to a football game.
This has been a particularly moronic effort.
Volatile stuff. Got you all fired up.
The Mike Gallagher Show. Weekdays at 9, right before Dennis Prager at noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're taking stock of the immigration reform controversies that are now consuming Washington when we're not paying attention to, terrorism and the threat that it poses to all of us. The person at the forefront of that fight most days is our next guest, Rosemary Jenks. She is the Director of Government Relations at an organization that I esteem very highly, Numbers USA. She is right in the thick of understanding what the so-called Gang of Eight has wrought or what it is trying to reek, shall we say. And Rosemary, it's great to have a chance to visit with you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, as always, Frank.
Let's visit quickly about what the Gang of Eight is and what role it is playing in all of this at the moment.
Well, you know, Senator Sessions actually has coined the term the masters of the universe for the Gang of Eight.
Perfect.
Yes, and I think it is a perfect term because these are 8 senators who believe that they know best about the future of America. So they got together with a whole bunch of special interest groups and knocked out an 844-page bill that essentially would, in fact, reshape the future of America.
Now, these special interests, I gather, include the White House and others, and they were always meeting behind closed doors, apparently. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. It's the White House. It's the big business, big labor, religious leaders, immigrant
advocacy groups.
Grover Norquist, yes. All of the folks who basically want open borders and want to reshape America. Apparently, they don't believe in the America that we have had for more than 200 years and want to change it.
They would remake it in their own image of a nation that is kinder and gentler and more immigrant friendly. What that means as a practical matter in terms of both our, well, national security, among other things, but also, as you say, the kind of America in which we would live, what it would mean for the rest of us who are forced to abide by laws that this kind of amnesty is being given to some. Rosemary Jenks is our guest. She is the Director of Government Relations at the marvelous Numbers USA, a grassroots organization committed to sensible immigration policies and practices. And you were talking about the masters of the universe, as Jeff Sessions calls them, that has conjured up this so-called Gang of Eight comprehensive immigration reform proposal. Tell us a little bit about the America that we would be living under if this initiative were actually to become law.
Well, I think the first step is that this is completely undermines the rule of law in the United States. I mean, by handing out amnesty to people who have broken the law as their first step in the United States, the rule of law is gone. Now, I want to know personally which laws I get to break and be forgiven for. But, you know, that's, I guess, a question for a different day.
But, well, Rosemary, but this is really crucial because it turns out it's not just that they would be waiving the law that says you're not allowed to come here illegally, but there's a whole slew of other aspects of our, you know, federal code that would also have to be set aside for these folks, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. And there are pages and pages in this bill of so-called waivers. We're waiving criminal inadmissibility. We're waiving document fraud. We're waiving, we're giving an amnesty to all the employers who illegally employed them, many of whom didn't pay Social Security withholdings, didn't pay Medicare withholdings. So they all get an amnesty too. So, I mean, the scope of lawbreaking in this is astonishing. And the most frightening thing, Frank, is that the Gang of Eight senators have not actually read their own bill.
Yeah, well, how
Senator
could they?
Rubio, but this is the point. They've been behind closed doors for 4 months now. We're just getting this, and we know more about this bill than Senator Rubio does.
Right. And at this moment, we're speaking relatively early in the day when we talked to Rosemary Jenks, our guest from Numbers USA. There is the first and, by some accounts, basically the only hearing that is going to be held on this bill in the Judiciary Committee still scheduled. Is that correct, Rosemary? Is it conceivable that this could be all there is for this 844-page piece of legislation? Are we going to get another Nancy Pelosi, you'll find out what's in it after it's been enacted approach done?
Well, you know, Senator Leahy has actually generously agreed to have a second hearing.
Oh, a second one. Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah.
On Monday.
So if everyone spends their entire weekend reading 844 pages of legalese, this Senate Judiciary Committee will be absolutely prepared to dig into this bill. So, yeah.
You say this with a touch of cynicism and skepticism, for sure. One of the masters of the universe you've alluded to, who seems to be carrying a disproportionate portion of the water for these guys, is Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, elected basically as the darling of the Tea Party. I gather he's not being held in such high regard by such folks these days. How do you see his role in this, and what is he saying about the problems that that you've identified? And we've only touched on a couple of them, but where is Marco Rubio now on all of this?
Well, this is part of the problem. And, you know, I don't know if it's that his staff is leading him astray or that he just has fully bought in, but he is actually providing falsehoods about this bill. He's being asked very specific questions about specific provisions in the bill, and he's saying, no, that's not true. You know, the whole border security trigger thing, I mean, the triggers are nonsense in the first place. The Janet Napolitano has to come up with a plan, actually two plans, and then the amnesty begins. But supposedly before the newly legal illegal aliens can get green cards, there's supposed to be all kinds of enforcement done. Well, the bill doesn't say that. It does not actually say that an entry-exit system has to be in place, even at all seaports and airports. It does not actually say that E-Verify has to be being used by all employers. It does not actually say that the entire plan that Napolitano comes up with has to be fully implemented. It's nonsense. You know, and he is saying absolutely emphatically, no, these are serious triggers. These are serious triggers. Not a single green card will be handed out until all these things are done. Well, that's nice if he believes that, but it's not in the legislation.
Yeah. So, Rosemary Jenks, is he, well, to put a fine point on it, lying about this, or is it simply that he is ignorant of the legislation as it stands? And he's made noises in the past about the need for a full, you know, hearing on these matters and debate and amendment and so on. Do you think that that is also something on which he may not be as honest as we would expect and want?
Well, I think, first of all, I think he has not read the bill. I think he, you know, I don't know if it's just his staff, but look, they asked Senator Menendez and Senator Schumer's staffers to write this legislation. You get what you pay for.
These are senior Democrats who are all in on the so-called path to citizenship. And Rosemary Jenks, again, you are deeply, deeply steeped in these issues and the politics of them, as well as the substance of immigration reform, given your great work at Numbers USA. Amnesty is not a word that you hear from any of these guys. It's all about a path to citizenship. What difference is there, if any, in the two terms?
Well, there is no difference. I mean, a path to citizenship, legalization, whatever you want to call it, it's still amnesty. And the fact is, under the law, the punishment for being in the United States illegally, for entering illegally or overstaying a visa, is that you have to leave the United States. So if you don't apply that penalty, it's an amnesty. We are giving illegal aliens exactly what they came here for, which is the right to work, despite the fact that we have 20 million Americans who can't find full-time jobs. But now, there are major, major national security implications in all of this. Because, I mean, we know now that the Boston bombing suspects are foreign-born, they're Chechens. And so what we need to find out is how they got into the United States, why they were allowed here, whether background checks were done. But let me say this. If you're asking the USCIS to conduct background checks on 11 million illegal aliens, you're out of luck. Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
Forget about it. Rosemary Jenks, we're not going to forget about you. We'll be talking, I hope, next week and often through the critical passage of this process, and hopefully not the passage of this reform. Thanks for the great work you do at Numbers USA. We'll talk soon. Next up, Gail Trotter, one of the most articulate advocates for gun rights, joins us to talk about the fascinating developments this week on the scuppering of the efforts to constrict them straight ahead.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The effort to discover and neutralize the perpetrators of the latest Boston massacre has entered a highly dramatic and dynamic phase. One suspect has been killed in a gunfight in Watertown, Massachusetts. Another is, as I speak, the subject of an intense manhunt there. Police have identified the two as brothers from the Russian province of Chechnya, whose Muslim population has been radicalized in the course of Vladimir Putin's protracted repression there. We'll soon know if they are responsible for this attack, and if so, whether they acted alone. Until then, speculation has become a national pastime, but not a very productive one. This much is clear, though. The perpetrators of this attack are not the only ones who wish us harm. Every American must now become part of vigilantly defending our country against them. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I am very pleased to be able to welcome the return to our microphones of Gail Trotter. She is a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. She's a practicing lawyer in Washington, D.C. as well, but she is also one of the most formidable and articulate and, I think, effective advocates for the rights of Americans to bear arms under our Second Amendment to the Constitution. She has had a big week this week, and Gail, maybe we could reset, as they say in Obama administration, for a moment just by describing how you got into gun rights activism earlier this year, I believe. And then we'll get into what has been developing in the interval since.
That's right. Well, I had been writing a series of op-eds and having radio interviews about our Second Amendment rights, and I would never have characterized myself as a gun rights advocate or activist, but I saw that with this last election that we had a serious shift in the conversation about our fundamental constitutional right to defend ourselves. And as I started writing these op-eds and doing research on it, I realized that gun restrictions disproportionately harm women. And the more research that I did on my own, just looking at crime statistics and finding out this really stunning fact, this number, that over 90% of violent crime in our country occurs without a gun. And thinking about it as a woman who's faced with those kind of threats, I realized that a gun is a great equalizer for a woman in those situations, because if you have a violent criminal attacking you, you might not have the same amount of strength, you might not have the same amount of training in hand-to-hand combat, but if you have a firearm, you're able to reverse the balance of power. And I was really delighted that I was invited to speak before the Senate Judiciary Committee in January to explain to the senators that all these emotional appeals to further restrict our gun rights really ignored the disproportionate harm it would have on women.
Yeah. And you know, that was such a stunning contribution to the debate. It really seemed to me that it shook things up rather dramatically, and against the backdrop of some of these compelling and obviously deeply traumatic testimonies from folks whose families had been afflicted by the massacre of children in Newtown, Connecticut. You had kind of a reality check, I think, that you brought to the party. Tell us a little bit about how the legislative process has worked over the past few months, including the so-called Toomey Mansion initiative of late.
Well, that's right. I realized that I had struck a nerve when the New York Times lead editorial the Sunday after my testimony was all about my testimony. And I think it really changed the tenor of the debate. Because
Needless to say, it was not a flattering profile of you.
No, it wasn't.
The New York
it basically
they
said
were
my views
with
were
you.
Dangerous. They were not happy with me, anyone on the left. And it's funny because looking at this, it's really not a partisan issue. There are plenty of people, I've been going around the country speaking about this issue, and there are plenty of people who are liberal Democrats on a whole range of issues, but they understand that you fundamentally have a right to effectively defend yourself against violent attack. And so as we look at the history of the legislation...
But most of, if I can just interrupt, I think most especially this point that... despite the effort to put women into the front lines of combat and so on, it clearly is a case where, you know, you have certain disadvantages under many circumstances, even from people who are not gun-wielding themselves. And this is an equalizer, a game changer, in other words, if women are armed. So, excuse me, go ahead.
Yes, and I think that was a real key to my testimony, is that we heard all these horrible stories about people in the situations like Newtown and Aurora, but the media had not been highlighting the situations that I just pulled. I'm not a journalist. I just pulled it from trying to do research, and I had 21 examples in my testimony of women protecting themselves from violent attack, and the media is not highlighting those stories. And I found this other amazing statistic. We have up to 2.5 million defensive gun uses a year. And sometimes people who oppose Second Amendment rights say, well, you know, you don't want to kill somebody to defend yourself. And another number that I found was that in less than 1% of defensive gun uses is the attacker either injured or killed. So in those circumstances, you just have to brandish the gun, show it, and any smart criminal is going to, you know, flee and find someone who's not armed to attack.
It has a deterrent effect, which we're rather big on here at Secure Freedom Radio. Okay, so cut to the chase. You've got the president and Joe Biden, his vice president, capitalizing, if I can use that expression, on some of these horrific incidents to try to move forward a rather sweeping agenda. It came a cropper in bits and pieces, but it looked as though the upshot was going to be some kind of mandatory background checks that a very prominent conservative Republican by the name of Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania joined forces with a very conservative relatively conservative Democrat, Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, to forge. What happened to that idea? I mean, first of all, I guess let me just say, tell us quickly what happened to the rest of the agenda, and then we'll get to the Toomey Mansion.
Well, it was so fascinating because Obama and Biden, through their task force, came up with this, I think it was 23 or 26 recommendations of things that they were going to push for, and they had grand sweeping ambitions of limiting federally limiting types of weapons and ammunition, the ability to use a lot of ammunition and universal background checks. And they had a very large sweeping idea of what they were going to be able to do to kind of capitalize on, you know, basically our nation's grief at these events like Newtown and Aurora. And the really fascinating thing is what ended up being proposed that looked like was most likely to pass was this Toomey Manchin supposedly bipartisan compromise, which was really a thin gruel of what Obama and Biden were really pushing for in the first place, and other senators like Senator Feinstein. So this was like the lowest amount. It didn't even really reflect their ambitions. And the nation was really watching to see what would happen. But fortunately, there were enough senators who were able to hear from their constituents and understand that this legislation that was being proposed would have done nothing to stop Newtown or Aurora or any of these mass shootings that we're having. And as you know, these mass shootings are not the only violence that our country is experiencing right now, obviously with the Boston bombing, and just coming up with laws, trying to pass something for the politicians to say, oh, we've done something, is really typical, where the law that they're proposing doesn't even fix the problem that they're using to advocate
the pretext.
The law.
Yeah, Gail, we're almost out of time. Just very quickly, the concern that a sufficient number of senators had to block even this very thin gruel, as you call it, seemed to be about creating at least a precursor to a mandatory gun registration or registry, I should say. Was that your concern as well? And just very quickly, talk about President Obama's churlishness in response to his defeat.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This was definitely creating a path to a national gun registry. And this has always been a concern for people who care about Second Amendment rights. And we think about the other constitutional rights we have, and we don't keep a list of who exercises their constitutional rights. And why should the Second Amendment, why is there some heightened difficulty to exercising our Second Amendment rights? And the real interesting thing was after this bill went down in defeat, Obama came out and basically gave this speech to the nation saying, you know, it's such a shameful day for our nation and all these people support this. And the contrast between that and his approach with Obamacare, where the nation did not support Obamacare and there was all sorts of distortion of congressional rules to try and get that passed, and it was such a complex bill and Americans are still not happy with it, and he's just stuck with it. It's just a remarkable contrast. You look at what he says, and he's just not consistent from one legislative battle to the next.
It's his way or the highway, no matter what the American people feel. And interestingly, on that point about the opposition, even one of his own leading Democratic senators, Max Baucus, has said that Obamacare is going to be a train wreck. And I think this will be, too. And so would, of course, his comprehensive immigration reform. Gail Trotten, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk with you. We'll do so again soon. Next up, Bill Gertz joins us, taking us inside the ring. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate, and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas.
Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
When is America's day of reckoning? Dennis Prager wants to know.
We are robbing from the next generation to pay for this one. This is the America that we are inheriting
and that we are giving our children to inherit.
And you wonder, at what point will there be reckoning?
The Dennis Prager Show. Weekdays at noon, right before Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Air travel can be a nightmare, but Mike Gallagher says there are things that make it even worse.
I'm sitting on the plane, and there's this guy sitting across the aisle from me. Not only does he disgustingly take off his shoes and his socks, he gets up and goes into the bathroom barefooted. Do you know how nasty the floor is of the bathroom on an airplane?
The Mike Gallagher Show.
Ugh.
Weekdays at 9, right before Dennis Prager at noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we are each week at this hour, by our friend and colleague Bill Gertz, one of the great national security reporters of our time, currently a senior editor with the Washington Free Beacon, which has been doing just unbelievably outstanding reporting on so many issues at the moment, but not least the one that we're going to visit with Bill most immediately about, namely the ongoing story, as we speak, still very much in play in Boston, the drama that seems to now be coming down to a couple of Chechen brothers who have, we're told, been identified as the responsible parties for the horrific bombing in the Boston Marathon earlier this week. Bill, tell us what you make of all of this, what we know at the moment, recognizing that we'll know more later.
Well, it's a fast-moving situation, and it looks like they that this was, in fact, Islamist extremism. We don't know that for certain, but you know, 90% of Chechnya is Muslim, and these appear to be self-radicalized Muslims. They appear to be following the playbook of Al-Qaeda's Inspire magazine, which its first issue talked about pressure cooker bombs, and then in later issues talked about attacking sporting events. So they seem to have taken a page out of that. We won't know for certain until they actually get the full information, but my guess is that we're going to find out that these were Islamist extremists.
We talked earlier in the program, Bill, with Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch a bit about Chechnya. You've long monitored developments in former Soviet Union and then subsequent to its fall, Russia. Tell us what we should be thinking about and worrying about that particular festering sore, as I think we called it with Chris, is now beginning to manifest itself on our shores.
Well, to me, it's more of the overall Al-Qaeda effort that we've known about for some time to seek out people who could conduct attacks against the West that didn't appear to be from Middle Eastern countries. I know that that was a big push by Al-Qaeda to recruit people. It's just an issue that I'm sure the Russians have a lot to say about Chechnya. They had a scorched earth policy to try to wipe out terrorists there. We know that the Chechens have carried out some horrific attacks. It's including some school massacres, and it's definitely the first time we've had a major terrorist attack like this in quite some time.
Bill, let me ask you a question that really goes as much to your profession as it does to sort of the government and its policies and sort of these facts that you specialize in covering. To what extent do you believe, Bill Gertz, that we are somewhat handicapped in our, well, in the first order, our understanding of this threat and in the steps that we should be taking to counter it by virtue of what has been evident in the press of late, as well as from our government, a kind of, well, some call it political correctness or multiculturalism or diversity sensitivity, or I think our enemies think of it as submission. But what role is that playing in all of this, do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I think that generally there's, in the part of government, they've been so pressured by leftist and Islamic groups to avoid any mention of the motivation behind some of these attacks and other attacks. And that is really having a very negative impact on the ability to really counter this. I mean, you know, the idea right now, the Obama administration policy is to use drones to kill terrorists. And ultimately, that strategy is not going to work. I mean, it will limit the leadership of terrorist groups around the world, but it won't end it. You need an ideological counter. You need to attack the ideology behind this terrorism in order to ultimately win. And that's really where the U.S. has been deficient. They have been reluctant. They have refused to focus on this political Islamist ideology, which is the motivating factor of terrorism, as you are totally aware, I'm sure.
I think that it's absolutely at the core of it, and they call it Sharia. Whatever else we decide to call it, it's very much something we have to take stock of. And just, Bill, to draw down on that, do you find within your circles in the Fourth Estate a reluctance to talk about this as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been watching the coverage and reading the coverage. I think the statement of Deval Patrick early on in the investigation, I think in the first press conference, he said, let's not target any particular group, as if somehow, you know, there was this backlash. There was no backlash. I think, you know, people are rightly to be concerned about this problem, and they should be pressing government to do the right thing in terms of being honest and clear and educating the public about the nature of the threat. And that can be done without violating people's civil or human rights.
Yeah, and has to be done as a practical matter. You're so right.
Yes.
Bill, let me just hit a couple of other things in the few minutes we have with you. In no particular order, you had a very interesting piece. Bill Gertz, of course, is our guest with the Washington Free Beacon. He is also the author of Inside the Ring, a must-read column at the Washington Times. Inside the Ring this week, you talked a bit about North Korea, suddenly off the front pages, but not off the threat spectrum by any means, possibly being inclined to use tactical nuclear weapons to force the reunification of the Korean Peninsula on their terms. Give us a quick sense of what the seriousness is of that threat.
Sure. According to an intelligence assessment, according to officials familiar with it, that there's a strong belief that Kim Jong-un is willing to wage nuclear war, actually in a bid to kind of salvage his regime in the face of basically regime collapse in the North and the prospect of future reunification. And this assessment was that, you know, initially people were saying, well, North Korea would be suicidal to conduct these attacks and that they won't do it without China. But this assessment said no, that Kim Jong-un could, as a way to try and salvage his regime, launch a nuclear strike against U.S. bases, against the United States, in a bid to try and position his regime. And they noted that he fashions himself after North Korea's communist founder Kim Il-sung, who basically went to war during the Korean War to do the same kind of thing, partly as a way to salvage his communist regime.
His grandfather, whose birthday they celebrated with considerable fanfare earlier this month. Bill, quickly, you've written about the SOF 700, the special operators who've called for a special select committee to investigate the Benghazi affair. Do you see evidence that that's what's going to come next?
I see resistance among Republican leadership, including Speaker Boehner, to do that, despite efforts by Representative Frank Wolf to press for this and others. It's clearly needed. There are remain unanswered questions, and the administration is refusing to address it, claiming that it's water under the bridge and they don't want to discuss it. But it's absolutely imperative that this be looked at. And, you know, we remember the president said that he would hold those people who carried out the attack accountable, and it's clear that they haven't done that as well. So there's an international lack of effort to do that.
It's on both fronts. It's truly scandalous. Bill Gertz, thank you for keeping us apprised of it and other issues of great importance. I know you will continue to do so. And the next shoe to drop on that front may be some sort of kludged up report from the various committees that have been looking into this. Progress report, I think, is how Speaker Boehner is calling it. We'll be expecting your analysis of that in the days ahead. We'll look forward to talking with you next week and to talking with the rest of you as well next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.